Hope, we do a scorecard.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ideas of the scorecard is a plot.
Uh-huh.
If you don't give this plot 5 fucking stars, I'm going to kick you off this show. I'm going to rebrand it.
All right. Oh,
we're
okay.
We're going to have an entire falling out.
Ho, ho, ho.
Cheers, motherfuckers.
Cheers, motherfuckers. It's almost Christmas.
Welcome to Say Smut, a literary podcast for readers and non-readers.
Thank you for coming to our North Pole. That's Sarah, and she loves books.
And that's Hope. She loves getting down on the North Pole. No, okay. Sorry.
I'll nope, stop that's that. Correct. No, keep nope. going. That's true. That's canon. That
is canon.
She's getting down on the North Pole every Friday.
Every Friday night. Just Fridays, no Saturdays.
Just Fridays.
That's Hope. She loves talking to me about books. Each episode, I break down the plots of some pretty wild books to Hope, who has not read them. And if you are not listening to this podcast with sparkling flavored water in a holiday-themed cup, you are not with us.
Yes, you're in a different zone.
I got on the call. We're literally showing our mugs to no one or glasses to no one right
just
now.
Just each other.
Just each other. Mine is like a wine glass with a Christmas tree stem. And yours, will you describe yours?
Yeah, mine is like a cute little pug wearing Christmas lights. It's just like a coffee mug.
I got on the call and influenced her to also get a sparkling water in a fancy festive mug. Mm-hmm, so we are so in the mood for the holidays. We've got one more episode after this one that is our regular holiday theme. And then we will do our year-end wrap-up for all of those updates. And maybe if you want to get a little present from us Santas,
mm-hmm.
we've got a giveaway going on.
We do.
Yeah, on our social media.
Yeah, we do.
And so go follow us on Instagram at Say Smut Podcast. We've got one of my favorite books from this year, which is Lights Out. It's a dark comedic romance. Similar vibes to like Butcher and Blackbird, which we did this fall. And we also did like our year-end like wrap up from an episode perspective, like how many episodes we did, how many books we covered, what types of books we covered. And then so we will do these final episodes for the year, and then we will go on hiatus during January because we need to bring in the new year with some relaxed vibes.
Yes, we got to start refreshed and ready to go for 2025.
Yeah. So follow our socials at Say Smut Podcast on TikTok and Instagram for however long we may have TikTok. But we need to get into this book.
We
today.
Do. Mm-hmm.
I think it is the longest book we have ever done.
Wow.
I believe it is approximately, I have it right here, 480 pages.
Ooh, geez Louise.
So before I jump into How My Neighbor Stole Christmas by Megan Quinn, which is another one of my favorite holiday reads this year, I want to give you some content warnings. We've got sexual content per use.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a little BDSM-y bondage in there, okay?
Ooh.
We've got mention of a parental death and death by a car accident, okay? So those are your trigger warnings. If you can't handle today's episode, that's A-okay. Come back. We'll chat another time. But for those ratings, Storygraph has this as a 3.85 and Goodreads has a 3.89. Sarah gave it a 5-star.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Good to know.
So I want to tell you a little bit about Megan Quinn. This is a little bit longer from her Goodreads, so bear with me here. When I was in high school, I occasionally read books but was consumed by other teenage things, so I didn't think I didn't take the time to appreciate a good book on a cloudy day, wrap up in a blanket on the couch. I don't know why I'm reading everything backwards today. It wasn't until I received a Kindle for Christmas one year, me too, girl, that my world completely flipped upside down. When looking for books, I came across the contemporary romance genre and was sold, and I haven't turned back since. So she currently resides in the beautiful Colorado Springs, where the sun is always shining and there is a trail waiting to be hiked on every corner. And she shares a lovely home with the love of her life and my 5 four-legged children.
Wow. So,
again, it's my hypothesis that you have to have an animal of some sort if you're going to be a writer.
Or children with a lot of legs.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Just one of the, have a lot
one of
legs.
The two.
So How My Neighbor Stole Christmas had to be one of our reads this year, Hope. I needed it in this lineup because it has gone viral on TikTok.
Ah, of course.
For a specific TikTok sound that somebody made from the audiobook where they bleeped out all the inappropriate words of something that happens.
Oh.
So I will be giving you the actual quote, and I will not be bleeping out.
We don't bleep on Say Smut.
So if you have two-legged children with you,
or four-legged children with you,
you should turn this off and really question why you're playing a smut podcast in front of your children. But I also want to disclaim that since this isn't our typical like novella that's like 30 to 60 pages, mm-hmm. and I can't include every single detail. Otherwise, I would just be giving you guys the audiobook.
That's right. True. You'd just be reading the book.
Yes. So I cut out some scenes. I cut out some side plots. I only keep the important stuff in, again, because it would just be too freaking long. And so I want to start us off by getting a little atmospheric, Hope.
Okay. Right? I'm ready. I am metaphorically closing my eyes so that you can set the scene.
Okay. This book, I will also tell you, is just so funny and witty and very, like I said, atmospheric. It's very scene setting, but there's also a narrator throughout the book. So he gets, even though it's dual POV, so we get both main characters' points of view, we have a narrator who will sometimes do a little like rhyme at the beginning of a chapter that's almost like similar to like The Night Before Christmas. Sure. It's very like scene setting, and it's like another third point of view who gets to kind of call out the characters on their shit. Okay. Sure. So the prologue is the narrator kind of setting the scene for us, but I'm going to skip over that for now. I'll bring him back in when he's necessary. But I want to introduce you to our female main character, Story Taylor.
Okay.
Storee. Okay.
Wow. I was going for Stori.
Oh.
But this is interesting too.
Mm-hmm. She and her sister, Taryn, mm-hmm. are visiting their great aunt, Cindy, who's like 91 years old. Okay.
Okay.
Aunt Cindy lives in Kringletown, Colorado,
sure.
which is where she visited, like her and her sister would visit there every holiday, you know, it was like kind of the go-to holiday vacation that they took every year.
Sure, obviously.
Do you know of any holiday themed towns
around? I sure do. And not just because you asked me to find some, except yes, that is why.
I should disclose, instead of having you do one big research, I asked you to just answer a couple of questions that I'm going to weave throughout the story because they were questions I had. So this is my first question to you.
And the answer is yes. You bet your jingle butt that there are places celebrating Christmas and selling Christmas.
Capitalizing.
65 days a year. There are all kinds of shops and museums and attractions that do 365 days of Christmas. But I wanted to focus on two towns specifically that go hard in the red and green paint all year long.
Okay.
First one of these is Santa Claus, Indiana, which is which is the self-titled America's Christmas hometown. It has Holiday World, which is an amusement park. It's got Santa's candy castle and lots of Christmas shopping. There's a Santa Claus museum and village. And in that Santa Claus museum, there is the original, I'm using air quotes, Santa Claus post office, which is going to come into question in 0.1 seconds when I tell you about the second place that is also Christmas 365 days a year, which is North Pole, Alaska, not the actual North Pole.
Got it.
First
Thank
of all,
you.
Gotta clarify. But this little zone in Alaska was named by a developer in like, I think the 1940s, who was hoping that maybe toy companies would buy plots of land in a place called North Pole, Alaska, so that they could advertise that their toys were made from the North Pole.
I mean, I get it, but also just logistically, infrastructure-wise, that's not going to work. Sorry.
Yeah, it so didn't so work expensive. That not a single toy factory built up there, but it did become a place where people live, and it's never not Christmassy now. So there are decorations up all year. They have themed streets like Santa Claus Lane and Kris Kringle Drive and Mistletoe Lane. They have a Santa Claus house and a Hotel North Pole, and then they have a North Pole post office, and so they will just get the influx of letters that are like to Santa the North Pole. And then they have volunteers who help answer Santa's letters for him, since a lot of them come to that one place.
That's so fun.
Yeah. So, yes, you can go there. It'll be Christmassy 365 days a year. But then there are also, like, Christmassy museums and Christmassy shops that are open all year that are always Christmassy and all kinds of different attractions you can participate in if you got to get that Christmas spirit all the time.
Awesome. Well, I think the second North Pole location you mentioned is very similar to Kringletown in what I know. Okay. Because it has avenues, like you said, named like Mistletoe Lane and like all this stuff. We'll get into that here in a second. But I want to come back to Aunt Cindy. She is kind of like the single aunt that everyone took care of, right? And now the young ones have grown up. They haven't been around. Mm-hmm. In fact, they haven't been around in like 10 years. Okay. Like, yeah, they've seen each other, but like they haven't come back for like the holiday season like they typically did when they were kids.
They've got their own stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. So why are the sisters here now? Well, they're here to take care of Aunt Cindy after she had a really big fall and broke her hip.
Oh, no. Okay.
Here's what you need to know about Aunt Cindy, though. She can be very dramatic. And as our author writes, an elderly person falling is like a death sentence. So like the family group chat blows up and is like, how are we going to help her? Blah, 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 blah. Well, Taryn, the sister, is a medical professional. So she's going to go and take care of Aunt Cindy for a while she can take some time off work. But
lovely.
Story also gets kind of roped into going because she works editing movies for the Love Mark channel.
You know, a Love Mark channel.
Yeah. So she can remote work anywhere. And so she kind of gets dragged into like going along with Taryn. Okay.
Yeah. It would be nice if you helped your sister, helped your aunt.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where her and her sister aren't that close. They actually have kind of polarizing personalities. It's not that they hate each other. It's just like we don't really have anything in common as adults, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. So while Story is getting excited for the smell of gingerbread in her great aunt's home and like curling up with the Barbie comforter in the twin bed she always slept in every night, you know, during the winter holiday. And she's like hesitant though, because she has a mortifying past with Kringletown.
Oh,
which dates back to 10 years ago when she was last here. Right?
How old is she now?
I'll give you this timeline. I was going to do it in a little bit, but
okay, sorry,
she was 18 when she left. It's been 10 years, so she's like 28. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So just keep that in the back of your head. Some mortifying incident had happened. But then when she walks into Cindy's house, she is shocked to find that the house isn't even decorated for Christmas. This is not how she remembers it. And her sister's like,
it's almost like your aunt broke her hip.
Her sister's literally like, did you forget she broke a hip?
She's infirmed.
But I should disclose that when Cindy does come on the scene, she's like decked out in a tracksuit with blue tinted like glasses, and she's got like a bunch of spunk, and they're like, wow, you seem to be doing really well, Aunt Cindy. Like, almost like we don't need to be here. And Aunt Cindy's like, what are you talking about? Of course you need to be here. Blah, 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 blah. Okay. So let me give you a vibe check again about the sisters.
Mm-hmm.
So you can imagine that they're kind of bickering, you know, Story's a little chaotic and just kind of rolls with life, while Taryn is very clinical and straightforward. So you can imagine that they're bickering over these responsibilities, and they also bicker over one other thing. What do you think that other thing is when you're coming to visit a relative? What do you think you're going to bicker over?
I suppose you may bicker over where you're going to stay.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are correct. She, like I said, they're kind of bickering over the rooms because now they are adults. And like Taryn has a boyfriend that she's like, I want to be able to have private time to call my boyfriend and like have my own space and like, you know, do what I need to do to keep my long distance relationship running. And so that pushes Story into the forbidden bedroom.
Not the forbidden bedroom.
That has all the creepy American Girl dolls in it that Story cannot stand. They are all there. Felicity, Molly, Josephina, Addie, Kirsten, and that, quote, perfect bitch Samantha.
Okay? That perfect bitch Samantha.
Did you have a American Girl doll?
I did not, but I really wanted to. And I believe we would get catalogs anyway. So I was always flipping through those catalogs. I just liked to look at the
pictures. No, the catalogs were great. Mm-hmm. I had a kit and then I became a journalist. So do we...
Who could have
maybe
seen
a
that
little
coming?
Influence? Maybe a little. But Cindy, these are Cindy's pride and joy. They are called the Six Queens, as Cindy likes to say. And I want to give you this quote from the book because the cut goes deep with how much Story hates these bitches.
Uh-huh.
And I think it'll just tell you a little bit about kind of how the writer, Megan Quinn, writes this book. It's very witty and funny. So Samantha, oh, Samantha with the perfect hair, crimson bow, and batting eyelashes. The absolute worst, propped up next to her white fluffy bed and red trunk, looking through her clothes like a princess of the progressive era that she is. Sure, she's an orphan, but she lives with her rich grandmother upstate New York. Compare that to freaking Addie, who had to pick her own birthday date because she didn't know when it was. Samantha had it good.
True. I mean, that's
no,
true.
It's fucking true.
She had it good.
It's absolutely true. So things are not going Story's way, right? She's back in the town where she has a fraught past. She's bickering with her sister, has to stay and take care of her Aunt Cindy in a house that doesn't even feel like the way she remembers it. And she's got to stay with these fucking dolls. Now, we're going to flip to our other point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Next door is Cole.
Okay. Hilarious.
So funny, but it is spelled C-O-L-E.
Thank you.
He is fuming because he notices that the Taylor sisters have rolled up and he can't believe that they're back in town. So his best friend, Max, whose real name is Atlas, but we won't get into that. So we will call him Max for the sake of this book. Okay. He's giving him so much shit for his alleged past with Story Taylor. Like there might've been like a little bit of a crush when they were kids, but no more. You could say that like Cole is maybe being a little bit of a Scrooge, a little Grinchy. Okay.
Sure. You could say that.
Yeah. Yeah. Now let's talk Kringletown. It's Christmas all year long. As you mentioned, Mayor, who is he? Doesn't matter. Santa is who's number one. Right?
Symbolic male mayor is Santa.
Yes. And Santa's name is Bob Krampus. And there's lights on each peak. There is greenery on all surfaces. The town square is called Ornament Park, which is in the shape of an ornament. There's like old school Bavarian style buildings, like all of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So where does Cole fit into this cheerful town? Well, he works at Evergreen Farm, which is owned by Max's family, where he takes care of the reindeer.
Okay. Obviously.
Mm-hmm. This will play in later, I promise. Okay. In addition to Cole's natural Scrooge-ish attitude, he believes that all the misfortunes that happen to the town are because of the Taylor sisters. Like where they go, they wreak havoc. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a completely reasonable thing to believe.
And when Max is like, I think you're being a little harsh, he starts rattling off like the hot chocolate shortage of 2012 when the signature tree flipped over in the town square. Like he's like listing off all of these things that like the girls have done in the past. Okay?
Not the hot chocolate shortage. No.
No. And by the way, we don't get elaboration on some of these. So they're just like mysterious events that have happened.
Just know it was really bad.
It was real bad. Okay. So you can imagine that when Cole is waiting in line at the local deli called Kringle Krampus, he is shocked. I'm going to let you know that the names are, I don't even include all of the names of in this town, but there are so many great ones. He is shocked when none other than Story Taylor comes waltzing through the door and gets in line behind him. And he's like, you know, if I were to write this book, I would have given them a week of waiting before they finally ran into each other. But of course, the first day she's in town, I run into her, right?
Classic.
So like I said, it's been 10 years since he's seen her, right? They were 18 at the time. And so she turns to him and they kind of acknowledge. It's that look that you do with somebody where you're like, do I know you? I know you. We know each other. We both know we know each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, you're Connor, right?
Oh, no.
And he's like, I'm Cole.
Just going to say, but he hates that.
Cole what? And he's like, Cole Black, because of course his last name is Black. And she's like, you're right. Cole is Black. Are you okay, Connor? And this is just stoking his fire, you know, mm-hmm. really pissing him off. So what ensues is literally multiple pages of them going back and forth about how his name is not, in fact, Carnar. And he's trying to explain that it's Cole. And she's just like, just pressing all the right buttons, which mm-hmm. is reminding him of when they first met at 8 years old. And they were, obviously they were neighbors. And Aunt Cindy thought it would be so fun for them to build a snowman, which is how they built their kind of bickering friendship mm-hmm. over the years. Okay. And he is like, let's just not even talk to each other. And she's like, fine. But I actually like need to fill the silence because like I get really anxious when it's like quiet. So then she just keeps talking and keeps, which by the way, girl, so relatable.
Yeah, I was going to say, could it be me? What do you mean?
Me? When I just told you, we were just talking about how I had yap regret because I yapped a little too hard the other night. And I'm like, crazy. The next morning I woke up and was like, I overshared.
I never do that.
But anyway, this girl's just great at baiting him, right? Mm-hmm. And of course, I have to tell you right now, because if you haven't picked up already, these are going to be our two main love interests. And of course, they find each other both attractive. They're both hot, right?
Like, yeah, as adults. You have to begrudgingly talk about how much you hate them, but they're really hot the whole time.
Yeah, yeah. So now that you have an idea of our main characters and the overall vibe of Kringletown and what we're walking into, let me get to the crux of the story, okay? Okay.
Ready.
Hope, we do a scorecard.
Uh-huh.
And one of the ideas of the scorecard is a plot.
Uh-huh.
If you don't give this plot 5 fucking stars, I'm going to kick you off this show. I'm going to rebrand
all
it.
All right. Oh, and
we're
okay.
We're going to have an entire falling out because this is so goddamn serious for 480 pages. Okay.
Okay. Jeez.
Aunt Cindy wants to participate in the Christmas Kringletown contest.
Okay.
It is a series of holiday-themed competitions to decide who is the cheeriest Christmassy of them all, okay? And she's done it pretty much every year. And last year, she got second place. But she will not let this injury keep her from this year's competition.
Okay? Yeah, it's like in The Grinch when they have the hoobly or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm. You're going to wait until you see the cover of this book. Awesome. It's definitely, and they make a lot of references to like Grinch-like things, like, you know, something grows 3 sizes, but, you know.
Classic.
Okay.
I'm getting to guess what that'll be.
Can't wait. So this is why Cindy was like, this is why I really needed story here, because I need you to be my representative in the competition this year. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Cindy's kind of guilting Story into participating by being like, there might not be a next year. And Story's like, oh, you're not going to die. And Cindy's like, no, I'm not going to die. I'm saying that I don't want people to think I'm down and out because of this injury. I need them to know I'm still in this fucking race. Like,
this one competition this year could ruin me if we don't win.
Yeah. She's like, I'm not going out as a loser. She was like, second place was really good. She's like, it's a loser. It's a loser ranking. Okay. Got it. We're all prepared for how intense Aunt Cindy is. Yeah,
we're all having a really healthy relationship with this competition.
Of course. And Story is so scared to participate because let's not forget that incident.
The unknown embarrassing mm-hmm. thing.
Would you like to know what it was?
Please, more than anything.
And then you have to tell me if you've ever had an incident that is this severe that you would not return to town for 10 years, okay?
Okay.
She was humiliated after she tripped over her elf shoes and knocked down a cut-out wooden present that tumbled into Mrs. Fisker's, who lost her balance and then tumbled down a hill into a river where she had to be rescued by first responders. Mm-hmm.
I've never done anything so embarrassing that I've had to never return to town for a span of 10 years. I've mm-hmm. done things that are very embarrassing.
Oh, yes. I
do that all the time.
We just talked last episode about what we would take off the list for like naughty things. I would take off so many things if it was embarrassing things. Like if we had a list of embarrassing things. Oh my gosh.
When am I not embarrassed?
Hope, you're from a relatively small town.
Yeah.
How many are in your town about?
How many are in my town?
Like your hometown, not the one you live in now.
No, I'm going to check. Because I don't actually know.
Because I'm from a town of 10,000 originally. And I felt like that was small. Because I really felt like we didn't all know each other.
At least according to the immediate Google results I got, approximately 6,846 okay. people in 2023.
Okay. If you were to participate in a town pageantry or like competition or anything like that, mm-hmm. how much weight is the political environment in this competition, do you think?
I would have to, I mean, I know the weight of similar competitions in your town, which is a bigger population than mine. So I have to imagine that if there was something like similarly as significant to the town, that maybe that would matter. I don't really feel like my hometown is super political, but I think that's because I'm not involved.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. So there are going to be a lot of politics that play a role in the judging and the elements of this competition. Sure, okay. Because it's a small town and everybody knows each other. So immediately story is like, what if people judge me based on what happened 10 years ago? Well, like, right. Right.
They might. I am right now.
So she's kind of got that floating in the back of her head. Like maybe this isn't a good idea. Now Cole finds out that story has entered the competition and she's going to be participating on behalf of her aunt, and he decides he's gonna enter the competition with Max to take her down so she can't get first place.
Uh-huh.
And obviously everybody thinks that this is a joke. Specifically Max thinks this is a joke because Cole is such a Grinch, but he's determined to change the tides to his side because he has a villain origin story. Would you like to hear it?
Yeah, always.
Yes. Well, his parents died in a car crash. If you didn't know from our trigger warnings.
I wasn't really sure who the trigger warnings applied to.
Don't worry. That's not even the villain origin story of why he's got this vendetta. Okay.
Okay. Continue.
So his parents died in a car crash during the holiday season when he was 18 years old. And he was just sitting on the porch waiting for more news to come when Story came up and joined him. And before he could even tell her what happened, because he was just kind of so struck in grief and like didn't mm-hmm. know what was the fuck was going on. She just starts spouting off about the Mrs. Fiskars incident and how she hated this town. She started calling all the town like mean names and like how lame it was and annoying and yada, yada, yada. And then she just left. Okay.
Wow.
So not only is this boy gutted by this accident that his parent, he just lost his parents.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't even get to tell his friend before she just spouts off about all this like pretty juvenile shit. And then about a town that, by the way, he has now fallen in love with because they took care of him so much after mm-hmm. his parents died. And then she just leaves for 10 years. Okay.
Well, there you go. They cannot possibly be that good of friends.
Yeah. Well, so then he's like, I'm not going to have her act like she's loving this fucking town when she said all those hateful things and then abandoned us for 10 years.
Sure, because okay? nothing can change over 10 years.
No, no. Hope. She may work for the Love Mark, Hallmark Love Mark.
Love Mark channel. Yeah.
But she cannot, you know, these emotions mean nothing. Okay.
You always hold the same opinions, values, and beliefs at age 28 as you did when you were 18.
As somebody who is 28. Fact. I can confirm that I do not. So let's get into some of the requirements for the competition.
Okay.
They have to be selected to participate. Not everyone can participate. So you kind of like put in your application and then you get selected. So mm-hmm. Story is obviously selected, Cole selected. And so are like these twin adult sisters who live down the block and some guy who went through a tough divorce and some woman who won last year. Okay. You got it.
Yeah. The cast of characters.
Yeah. There's like five of them. I'm not going to get into them. It doesn't really matter. The leaderboard is placed outside of Santa's house to track the progress of how these participants are doing during all these competitions, but they also can get points based on the holiday cheer they spread. So like Cole is trying to say like Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to mm-hmm. all these people, but he's so awkward and uncomfortable. He's saying it in like these weird old English ways and like curtsying to people. Like he's so awkward and uncomfortable, but also, you have Story and Cole out in public, like acting like they're cheery and go lucky, but then like murmuring insults to each other. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Essentially running a for your consideration campaign and then also just kind of shitting on each other.
Precisely. So I'm going to tell you about the competitions as the story goes on,
mm-hmm.
just so I don't reveal a competition that you might, I don't know, What did you think that the competitions are probably going to be? Like, if you were to guess, like, three of them.
I've been thinking about the Grinch the entire time. So I have to assume that it's, like, home decor, like, Christmas mm-hmm. light display. Mm-hmm. Probably something like Christmas, like cookie contest. Mm-hmm. Maybe something to do with being really good at wrapping gifts. Mm-hmm. I guess are three guesses that I have.
Mm, those are excellent guesses. We will reveal which ones are correct. So while things are gearing up for the contest, Story is trying to figure out why Cole seems to truly be harboring this judgment, like this grudge against her, like hates her, whatever. Because mm-hmm. let's not forget that she does not know that his family died in a car accident.
Yeah.
Okay. Until her Aunt Cindy just randomly drops it in a conversation as they're prepping for their first competition. I don't know. This was just like kind of like a bomb that she, which by the way, Aunt Cindy is going to be a bomb dropper for the rest of the book.
Amazing. Aunt Cindy would be a bomb dropper.
Yes. Let's not forget. This is the woman who wears nice track suits, tinted blue glasses, and is 91 rolling up.
Future
with a broken
me.
Hip. Yes. This is a terrible thing to happen, but like the car crash. Sorry. I should have emphasized not the glasses. I should emphasize.
Absolutely devastating to her
the
face.
The glasses were so not her style.
Yuck.
So while it's so sad that his parents died, it also, in the political scheme, makes a lot of people sympathetic to his cause.
That's true. Okay?
So Story, Taryn, and Cindy have decided that if Cindy appears to maybe be in worse condition than she actually is, maybe people will be sympathetic to their cause.
Yeah, if you could be a little more closer to death, that could really help us out.
So for the first competition, like Cindy is being wheeled in on her wheelchair. She's like hamming it up. She's like slumped and she's like sticks her tongue out a little bit. Like, she,
oh no.
She's like, I will win an Oscar. Okay. So the first contest is eggnog wars. Okay. They don't have to make the eggnog. They just have to like prepare the eggnog in a certain style. Okay. Uh-huh. So Aunt Cindy came in second last year in this category with her gingerbread eggnog recipe. So they decide we're just going to do it another go, which by the way, if you keep track throughout this book, they will repeat Cindy's actions from last year. And it's really kind of annoying because I'm like, come up with a new idea. She clearly didn't win. So
this is a second place performance. And I think you know this.
So as they're practicing their recipe for the big competition, Story has to go to the store and get some last minute spices.
Mm-hmm.
I just am going to tell you this right now because I know you're going to love it. The mm-hmm. store is called the Mercantile.
Lol.
Yeah, it's pretty
Get
good.
Out of here.
Yeah.
Get out of here, spice named hilarious Christmas store.
Yeah. So obviously, like I said, politics plays a role. So you're probably going to consider what the judges want, mm-hmm. right? Like what are they looking for? What is their style? And these competitions mean a lot. So Cole is trying to decide if he needs to go the creative route or the traditional route with these choices. So when he sees Story's basket at the Mercantile, mm-hmm. He decides she's going to go creative. So he needs to be more creative.
Good luck.
What would you make for an eggnog if it was your choice? Like what flavor or style?
This is so tough because I famously don't like eggnog. And every year I have a little bit of eggnog just to see if my mind has changed. And every year it hasn't.
Ditto.
I can tell you what I would not make, which is a recipe that my uncle Ian once made for Christmas. He was making, I don't know what all was in it. He was going to make an eggnog. I know it had obviously like a lot of rum in it, mm-hmm. And egg and some spices and stuff. And we called it Uncle Ian's Frothy Rum Nog. And it was not great. Mm. It was, in fact, it was so difficult that I started putting eggnog into it, hoping that would make it better, which again is crazy because I've just said,
yeah,
I don't like it.
Yeah.
So the antithesis of Uncle Ian's Frothy Rum Nog would be like an ideal result for me.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Mm-hmm. Well, Cole, we obviously know the gingerbread one is what the girls are going with. Cole is going for a dark chocolate hazelnut eggnog, which I'm with you. I'm not an eggnog person, but I feel like I'd enjoy this.
Yeah, it sounds nothing like eggnog so far. So I think I would be into it.
So he garnishes it with like a little bit of pine fresh from the Evergreen Farm, local dark chocolates, and two handmade mugs from the local stores because he really wanted to incorporate the town. However, Story is the one who gets first place and Cole gets second. And immediately, obviously, Cole is fuming again. And Aunt Cindy is so excited. I mean, she's jumping up. She's doing pelvic thrusts.
She shouldn't be.
Cheering with the crowd. She's
I wish
like,
she'd stop. Blow it on cover.
Oh.
Okay. Her tongue is back in her mouth and she's ready to party.
So this is the first moment that Story's like, maybe we can do this. Maybe we can win. And so Aunt Cindy like unveils her board, which is like an intricate cardboard display that she's adjusting every year to keep track of the competition. But like shit's getting serious. That's what you need to know, right?
We're about to enter a montage of preparation for the competition.
So next competition is an upcycle competition hosted by the local antique store owner. Okay. So you have to create kind of like a, I don't want to say like a live nativity because it's not a nativity, but like that concept of like a live display that will go on stage and then you're going to act out a scene or something, but it all has to be with upcycled materials.
Okay.
So last year, Aunt Cindy won first place by doing the scene of her in Meet Me in St. Louis, where Judy Garland is singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so, and the she doesn't actually sing the song, like it, she lip syncs it, right? Okay.
Amazing.
So they decide what better way to upcycle than to use last year's shit.
It's all upcycled.
It's all upcycled. So they, but of course, Story is doing it instead of Cindy. And she even hams it up by bringing Aunt Cindy on stage with her and singing to her.
Puts her hands on her shoulders as they look sadly out the window.
She looks half dead. She like is gray in the face.
For those of you who haven't seen Meet Me in St. Louis, the scene in which Judy Garland sings Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas is sad.
Yes, yes. And so like there's not a dry eye in the house. Like they're like, we've got this in the fucking bag until Cole and Max roll up and they decide to take a much more unique angle. They decide to recreate the scene from The Grinch when he's trying on all the clothes, but sexy.
Interesting. So I'm glad that you brought this up because the first thing I thought was, tell me they're going to do the scene in Mean Girls where they do Jingle Bell Rock. But I'm glad that we got a sexy spin on a scene from a movie.
Girl. Just put a pin in that.
Okay.
For a few more pages. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. So he's got lederhosen on, no shirt, bulky broad muscles. He's painted all green. She's like perspirating. She's like, this man is so fucking hot. I'm so annoyed. Anyway, so you could say Story is appreciating the view. But the upcycled part of their presentation is that all the clothes he's going through are secondhand clothes.
He conveniently has all of those outfits secondhand.
Well, of course, they go out and get these from the secondhand store and stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
So they're about to essentially put on a striptease in front of the whole town. And Cole says, quote, I don't want to make a 70-year-old woman wet. Show some respect. To which Max replies, 70-year-olds deserve to be wet too.
Hell yeah.
Which I think just emphasizes what we believe here on this podcast.
Yeah, we've been saying that all along. 70-year-olds deserve to get wet.
Yes. So the audience is like, at first Cole, you know, is kind of hesitant to be like all in it. Whereas like Max, who's, by the way, being the dog Max, is like, no, you got to put your whole pussy back into this shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like he's
you
like,
got to.
And Cole is like thriving now off of the audience's attention of all these like older women who are like screaming about to throw dollar bills on the stage. And so he decides to like pelvic hip thrust, like making like some older woman faint in the audience. Like, anyway, so quote, Story may have pulled at the crowd's heartstrings, but as Max put it, we pulled at the judge's weaknesses. Sherry Conrad, a closeted pervert, can't resist a shirtless man.
Can't be that closeted if you know about it.
Exactly. To be fair, the next chapter, Aunt Cindy admits that she was, quote, cock-shocked by the boys. Yeah, like, she was like, they were good.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
So I would also agree that that performance wins, probably.
Yes, yes. So, sure enough, Cole and Max win first place. Story gets second place. Okay. Next up, the light display. So, you were correct with that one.
Yes.
here's what's different about this competition. The points are broken down into two parts. So you get judged at the beginning of the competition by your light display, but you can improve it for a second judging at the end of the competition.
Okay.
Aunt Cindy always came in last with this competition. And she's like, you know who did my lights every year?
Would Cole?
Yes, he did. But she was always like, I wanted him to always go simple and stuff, but like he does people's lights sometimes. So like, I'm kind of nervous he's going to like rock this shit. Okay.
Sure.
So Taryn decides, you know what? I can help out in this category. This is my chance to shine. But remember her personality.
Mm-hmm.
So immediately Story is like, oh no, she's going to be slow. She's going to be a perfectionist. She's not going to be as creative as what we need. So sure. Story's like, I'm going to go scout out the competition.
Makes sense.
She goes to the local hardware store. There is no one fucking inflatables in this hardware store. I will first emphasize. Go back two episodes if you want that book. Okay. But the owners of this hardware store are the judges for the next competition, for this light competition. Okay. Oh. So she's going to kind of snoop around for some ideas. And guess who she runs into?
Cole, I would assume.
Absolutely. So he knows that what she's doing, that she's trying to like eavesdrop on him and like kind of scope out what he's doing to make her own ideas.
Right. That makes sense to me.
He's like, okay, I'm going to throw her off. So he strikes up a conversation with the owner being like, yeah, I think I'm going to go simple this year, you know, classic. And like at first the owner's like, what the heck are you talking about, Cole? And then she catches on that he's like putting on a performance. So she's like robotically like, yeah, that sounds good. Uh-huh. Do you want to do some blow-ups for your front yard? And he's like, you know what? We should do like a 50-foot tall blow-up for the front yard. Uh-huh. And he's feeding all this information that's false information. Right. Okay.
Sure.
He even has a fake phone call with Max confirming all the things he just said. Right. So Story falls for all this and goes home and tells Cindy and Taryn, but they quickly are like, you fucking idiot. It's against the rules to have blow-ups in the front yard for this contest.
Whoa.
So he was feeding you bullshit. Anyway, and she's like, fuck. Okay, well, what are we going to do? Anyway, unfortunately, Taryn's very logical measurements and estimates of like, she was like, this is how many feet this should be. So we're going to have this many lights. Like, lights are something you kind of need to measure with your heart.
Sort of, yeah. Always overestimate.
Yes.
I say.
She's like, 20 boxes of lights is not going to be enough. Like, if we really want to blow this shit up, it's not going to be enough. Okay. So they don't look very impressive. Meanwhile, mm-hmm. Cole's house next door is like a glowing dream.
Sure.
Okay. So Aunt Cindy is like, well, you know, honey, Cole started playing dirty when he started doing those hip thrusts and using his body to whore himself out to the town. Like,
so
maybe
true.
It's time for us to, you know,
try harder,
play dirty.
Sure.
Like, yeah. So Story decides to sneak into Cole's backyard to fuck with his lights.
Oh.
Can you tell me anything about if you were to like, you know, how easy lights go out, Christmas mm-hmm. lights. Can you tell me if it's possible for somebody to like wedge one of the light bulbs out and make like a whole string of lights go out?
Generally, yes, if they're set up in the way that most every single string of lights is set up, which is through having a closed circuit of electricity. So yeah, basically Sarah asked me how holiday lights work, and I'm going to do two big bullet points of directly quoting the U.S. Department of Energy, because they had a really great article about how holiday lights work, and they have a solid grasp on the flow of electrical currents. So
I would trust them with the flow of the electrical currents.
I do. It's a .gov website. You know it's serious.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so like, quote, in a simple electrical circuit, including one in an incandescent light bulb, electricity travels through a closed circuit, passing over a filament, causing it to glow brightly. And then the more that current passes over the filament, the hotter it will get and the brighter it will burn and the quicker it'll burn out. And string lights are like a bunch of those all connected, right? So mm-hmm. electricity is going up into a wire, it's going through a filament in the little bulb, it's coming back down out of wire and then moving into the next light and doing that. So if a bulb burns out or is overused or is unscrewed in that setup, it will open the circuit because there's not
and it's not getting passed on
for the electricity to go through, and that will make the rest of the lights go out. So they'd said When lights are attached in a series, electricity passes from power source to the first light and from light to light until it returns to the power source. So in this setup, which is like most setups, when a filament within any one bulb blows out, it creates an open circuit in the wiring. And that's it. So it's just, they're all strung together.
I think we've all fucked enough with, not actually fucked, but you know what I'm saying, fucked enough with Christmas lights that we know, like, huh, this should happen this way. Because I think in my brain, that's how it was happening too.
Right.
But Cole must have set his up slightly different so that they're not all congruently attached.
Mm-hmm. There because are she, different ways.
Yeah. She pulls out, she thinks, I'm going to pull this out and it's going to make all of his lights go off, essentially. And he's going to be fucked because he can't just like plug it back in. Like it's a, and like they're coming to judge it right now. Right. Like, right. So it's urgent time.
Uh-huh.
So she's like trying to warm up her fingers and her crotch because they're frozen and she's like, can't get the light bulb thing off. She's like fumbling.
Warming up your crotch is so important when you're trying to fuck up someone's lights.
Look, if I was to pick the warmest part of my body and I was next to my hot neighbor, I would probably put my hand in my crotch too. So anyway, not important. What's not, I'm not story. Okay. This is story is what I'm trying to say.
I can tell you that if the lights are set up in what's called a parallel setup, you can have a light go out and it won't affect the rest of the lights. And it's just to do with how they're wired.
Okay. Maybe that's the solution. Cause she pulls it out and it makes one little string goes out, but like not, they don't all go out how she was expecting. So she's like, fuck, that did not make the impact I thought it was going to. And then she hears people coming. So she like rushes back to their side of the yard and like shimmies underneath the fence. And then like, she like goes into the house and warms up. Well, Cole comes out and he's like, I know she was fucking here. I can see the fucking prints in the snow that go between our fucking houses. And
there's exactly one string of lights that doesn't work.
Yeah, there's exactly one string of lights. And so Cole and Max go to confront her. And when they knock on the door, Max is like, let me do the talking. Like, I'll get this sorted. But as soon as like the door opens, Cole is like, where is she? Like, just bulldozes in there and like Story's like in the corner in like a blanket and like trying to warm herself up. It's so clear she was just outside, right? Like
nose red.
And they just start going head to head, bickering, like doing their signature shit. And Max decides to add fuel to the fire by being like, oh, haha, remember when Cole was like super into you? Like, just Max is like the sidekick that's like your ride or die, but he'll drop things in the conversation that you're like, shut the fuck up.
Like no, keep it chill, dude.
Yeah. So I also like, I just think it was funny because then now she has this ammunition for him, right? That like he had a crush on her. So I'm going to insert now that people around town are seeing Cole and Story's interaction and they're maybe reading into it.
Sure.
And so she's like, they're like, that's so cute. Like, I think I've seen you guys like vibing, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There's an energy here.
And so Cole kind of like goes for this and he starts playing the role of this guy who's like smitten for the girl and she won't go out with him. And so now the town is taking pity on him.
Fascinating like, move. Oh,
come on, Story. He's just like such a good guy. Like he's the most eligible bachelor. Why wouldn't you go out with him? And he's like, you know what? I'm being too selfish. She's here for her aunt. And she, you know, she needs to focus on her family. It's just, I've been harboring these feelings for such a long time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. 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 So anyway, in this, so these little interactions start happening and like Story hasn't really figured out a way to navigate this political element, right? Of like now, not only does he have the sympathy of the town for his parents dying, but now he's kind of like the scorned man. Right.
Okay. Which for some reason is making him a sympathetic character to the town, and that would absolutely not work on me whatsoever.
Yeah. So in the light display, like, I think Cole gets fourth place. I can't quite remember what Story got. I apologize. For some reason, I didn't write that part down.
Higher or lower than Cole? Do you remember?
I think she got lower than Cole.
Sure.
Because I think there's five people in the competition, if I remember correctly. Anyway, so what's important, though, is this is a turning point because now they're really playing dirty. They're like, you know what? Fuck it and fuck you. I'm going to win.
Getting so serious.
Yes. So when they're out on the town, he's, you know, hamming it up about how she won't go out with him. And he even claims, you know what? I sabotaged my own light display because I know she was so stressed about the displays and I didn't want her to feel bad. So I sabotaged my own display.
Wow.
And this just riles her up even more. So she's like, you know what? I will go out with you. I would be happy to go out with you. So we're starting a fake dating trope about 40% of the way into this book. But meanwhile, Aunt Cindy and Taryn are like, hey, he's super hot. So keep your eyes on the prize. Don't get distracted.
They're going to talk about how hot he is. Mm-hmm. He's really hot.
Yes. So their first fake date is them doing like this evening stroll about town called the Cupid Christmas night, like where adults can kind of go out without their kids and do like shopping and whatever. So again, they are both so attracted to each other. Like they can objectively like admit that. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But they kind of keep on getting into each other's space. So like, they'll shuffle into a store and then she gets a little too close to him. But then they're tossing out like a witty insult. But then they have to hold hands. But then they make a sexual innuendo. Right. But then they're doing like the arm over the shoulder thing. But they're also like dropping some low-key truths about like, yeah, you abandoned the town like 10 years ago. Like, you know, that
I'm really glad we're going to have this conversation a little bit.
But just a little.
Not all the way, because communication would solve all of our problems.
What do you think is missing from this scene if you are fake dating during the holiday season and you're out and about in the town and you really have to sell it?
Mistletoe or kissing.
You are absolutely correct. So that's right. These nosy Nellies about town are like, oop, we caught you at the right time in the right place. And they both look up and there's mistletoe hanging above them. So now they have to kiss. So just as he's leaning in, he tells her, tell me no. But she doesn't.
Dun, dun,
and they mac out. They really mac out. But we're not going to talk about it, of course.
Fine.
No. It was just role playing. It was just for the sake of the fake dating. So let's get to the next competition, shall we?
I'm ready. Okay.
It's your favorite.
It's my favorite?
Yeah. What do you think it is?
Is it cookies? The baking?
It is a bake-off, but it's fruit cake,
as it's called in the Grinch movie,
fruit cake, fa-la-la. So Cole is trying to get that kiss out of his head, and what's the best way to do it but beating Story in this competition?
Making a mean fruit cake.
Absolutely. But Aunt Cindy took first place last year with her fruit cake recipe, so of course they're going to do it again this season. Story, of course, tells the judges that she made it with just a dash of romance after being caught, you know.
Sure,
some peeks at her man across the kitchen, which obviously endears her to the judges.
I was horny when I made this.
Mm-hmm. And Cole ends up taking third place with his pineapple fruit cake.
Because he was not as horny when he made his.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and Story gets first. So if you need an overall ranking of where we're at, Story is currently on the leaderboard in first place and Cole is in second place, but only a few points divide them. But before we get to the next competition, they have to learn how to do the next competition, which is a candy cane making competition. The contestants have to drive over to the town over from them, like a few miles away, to take a candy cane making class to kind of learn how to do it before they do it for the big day. You know what I mean? So it made me think, how long and how hard is it to make candy canes? Because it feels like that's really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Would you be able to tell me that?
I would be able to tell you that. And I'm so excited because I just pulled up a few recipes for making candy canes and looked at the time estimates that they were giving in like the batch sizes. And I believe it was on the Food Network recipe that I looked at that opened with like step one, go take a class for how to handle sugar in this way, because you have to get sugar so hot and you'll just burn the shit out of your hands. How long it takes, it is going to depend on the batch size and how good or not good you are with molten sugar. It helps that they will have had a class in this book, but according to the recipe estimates that I went through, the lowest estimate to make like 12 to 15 candy canes was 30 minutes. And I thought that was pretty low. I also saw a recipe that gave an estimated prep time of 75 minutes and then an additional 15 for cooking. And I think that's probably more realistic. Both of those were to make like somewhere between 12 and 18 candy canes. And a lot of the stuff that's taking time is melting down the sugar so you can get it to what is called the soft crack stage. It's, you have to condense sugar down into a liquid that can then cool into a moldable consistency that you keep warm as you're shaping it and like dyeing it and flavoring it. So especially in the shaping of it, you have to do a lot of putting trays of sugar in and out of an oven to keep it warm enough to be able to move it. And if it starts to harden, you've got to get it back warm again so you can keep molding it. It just is going to completely depend on your setup and stuff. But according to the recipes I looked at, if you're super good, it might only take you 30 minutes to heat up all of that sugar and stuff. And
make a candy cane. I don't believe that.
But I don't believe that. So let's go with the 90 minutes.
At least.
I would think not. Yeah. Low end, I would say an hour.
Yeah. That's kind.
If you're really, really good at it, though, maybe only a half hour.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, because I was thinking about it and I was like, I don't think I've met a single person who's homemade like candy canes. Mm-hmm. Like, this sounds like a feat. Like, everything else has been like reasonable for so far. Even like the eggnog thing, I was like, well, they're not making the eggnog. They're just like styling the eggnog.
You've got to have candy thermometers and you've got to watch the texture and temperature of the sugar that you're melting down with all the stuff in it, and then you got to pour it out, and then you got to wait for it to hit a certain consistency. And if you're gonna make it peppermint, you have to add the peppermint and like dye different parts of it, like take some aside and make it be white, and like all of this stuff, plus the rolling of the strands of candy together, I would just anticipate it takes a while.
So they have to, like I said, have to go to this town over to do the candy cane lessons. It's a whole thing that it's a whole side plot that I'm not going to even like get into why they have to go there.
That's the most reasonable thing that has ever occurred in a book that we've covered.
Is that
they're going to have a candy cane making competition, but they are going to make you take a class to learn how first.
Yeah. But the whole thing is like, they have to go to the town over because the guy who does it in town doesn't want the competition to take his recipes. And so they go to his other competition. Like, it's in the other town over who used to be his apprentice, or like, it's so fucking wild. Anyway, not important. I should let you know right now. That story is a Southern California girl.
Okay.
And we are in the mountains of Colorado.
Right. Not SoCal.
No. It is completely blizzarding out. And so how is she going to drive out of town? Well, with a lot of gumption. So she is like shaking and crying at the wheel, trying to drive through the storm. Something's going on with her back wheel. She's like, I can't figure this out. I need to pull over. She's like on a mountain cliff, like... She's like, I hate life, which, by the way, as somebody who's driven through Colorado numerous times, it is fucking freaky.
Yeah, it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, it depends what part, but like, yeah.
Happen to be afraid of heights, and I do happen to have like a bit of a fear of heights, so it can be really stressful on a narrow road.
She sees a sign for like a lookout spot coming up, so she pulls over there, but she finds that her rear wheel fell victim to a nasty pothole, so she's like, fuck, I'm stuck out here. These roads are really nasty. Like, I don't even know how to drive in it. And so she just is deserted in the mountains, and she's contemplating life, and she's sobbing in her passenger seat. She's like, who knows how long I'm going to be stuck out here. And just like 2 minutes later, there's a knock at her window.
Apparently 2 minutes. How long?
Yeah. So it's Cole, if you didn't know, who's heading to the same candy cane lesson. And instead of like teasing her or like taking the opportunity to just shit on her, he's like dead serious and is like, get your bag, get in my truck. We're going.
I mean, that's good because she could die. And it's also good because, just as a note, before you even really got into this scene, I wrote meet cute on drive to candy cane class, just as a prediction that I made.
Up. Yeah. Oh, that was so good. You know what? You can predict a lot. You know, we've been doing this for a year and a half now. And
I wrote the book.
You're doing really well at guessing this shit. So technically it's not a meet cute because they've already met. Yes, I get
you what I mean. Yeah, like a cute
interaction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a being nice to each other moment.
Yes. Well, that's in fact what's going to happen, because he's like a pro when driving on these roads. He's got like an expert, you know, truck vehicle thing, you know, that he can get on the roads and not be sliding around like me and my little Kia.
Oh my gosh. Not to mention his family died in a winter car accident.
Exactly. So he's like, I trained myself I faced my fear of driving in the winter because he wouldn't be
a dick here because it would be super, super traumatic.
Yes. And he's just like feeling this overprotectiveness for her in this moment. Cause obviously she's emotional. This is something that she doesn't know how to do and is very scared. And like, he's like being protective of her. It's very cute. Nice. So they like, what better time to have a trauma bond moment, but on the drive to the candy cane class, which like they start kind of chipping away at each other's defenses, including his like her being like, hey, why are you an asshole all the time? Or like, you act like an asshole. This is not who you were when I knew you. And like, he's like, yeah, it's a defense mechanism. Like, what are you like? So yeah, they're just kind of like going back and forth about how they got to this point. And she wants to know, like, why are you so upset with me? Like, the bickering is fine, but like, you took it to a whole new level when I came back to town. Like, what is this about? And he confesses that this last interaction they had was like right after the parents died. Like, he was like, and then I didn't see you again. And then like, this town really rallied behind me. And then you come back after the things you said. And she was like, you are right. That was terrible. I was such a bitch. Like, those were such selfish, terrible things for me to say. And like, I understand.
Was literally 18.
Yeah. And he even admits that he's like, I made Cindy promise that she wouldn't tell you about my parents. Like, because I didn't want you to know. Like, I just didn't want anything to do with you.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So they go to the candy making class together and they're like bonding because they get stuck together as partners and like, they're like teasing each other kind of. And then like on the drive home, they do some more trauma bonding. And he drops her off at her house and there's like a potential for a kiss.
Sure.
Or, like, could be a kiss, but it doesn't happen. Fine. It doesn't happen. Moment passes.
Whatever.
But to ensure like that they're making this bond, Story decides to come over to his house with some hot chocolate one night while he's out on his porch. And they start, you know, getting warm and cozy and like starting to address a lot of things. And he's like, well, you know, you were the girl who was always out of my league and you still are. And she's like, well, you were the boy who set the standard that no one has met. You know, they're kind of like, they're kind of like confessing little things, but then they're also like having little weird sexual conversations about like the last person they had sex with and how long it's been. Right.
Obviously.
And so then as more confessions come out, she like starts getting on his lap and they start making out and she's like, we should go inside. And he's like, no.
We shall fuck outside in the snow.
In the snow. But he's like, the house isn't ready for company. And she was like, okay, well, when it is, you just let me know. And based on the inspiration he got from their conversation, the next day he goes to Evergreen Farm and gets himself a Christmas tree, which is like a huge thing because the night before he admitted to a story that he really didn't do anything for Christmas since his parents died. Because he's like, it's traumatizing for me, honestly. So he brings the Christmas tree home and Story offers to help him decorate it. And it's a perfect time to hang out because Cindy and Taryn had to go out of town for a doctor's appointment. And so he's like, you don't have to worry about like them because they, you know, they're anti-coal. Well, I don't want to say anti-coal. Cindy's like not anti-coal, but like Taryn is like, he is competition.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're all like, don't fraternize with the enemy.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So the reason he was so weird about her coming in the house is because it's like preserved. Like, he's still sleeping in his childhood bedroom with all the stuff in it. There's, like, sheets on furniture. Like, nothing has moved in 10 years. Okay?
Okay. Sure.
So, obviously, this calls for more bonding time over the trauma. And she finds out how much the town actually took care of him, including her Aunt Cindy having him over once a month for dinner. Like, she starts realizing how much they've done for him. He even starts unpacking things in the house that he hasn't touched in years, like the china and stuff like that. Sure. Like, and so now they've made the house all cozy and they're just enjoying treats by the fire and the glow of the Christmas tree. The mood is set, but they're both a little scared because they're like, we've always toyed with each other, but we've never like hit the intimacy line. Like, even when we were kids, like, you know, but what better time than to dry hump on each other right now.
Yeah, like no time like the present.
Yeah.
Present, so, under the Christmas tree.
The first sexual encounter we get in this book is pretty far into the book, which I don't appreciate because I obviously am a horn dog and want it earlier. But it is very, it's fairly vanilla. It's very exploratory. They're it's kind of like they're young again. They're getting to discover each other. He actually never goes inside her. She just like nakedly grinds on him until she completes, and then he completes in her mouth. So he's like, "Will you please spend the night with me?" Which is like again, a big step. He hasn't like had anyone over, really.
Yeah, that's huge.
So they go up to his teenage bedroom.
In my head and my heart, it's shaped like a car.
No, it's absolutely a race car bed. don't worry. After another trauma bond session, they pick up where they left off and they give each other oral, and then she rides him. Of course, he's absolutely massive. And he's like, he's a big talker. He's a big talker through the experience. So he's like telling her to take it. He's telling her to like, oh, just breathe through it. Like, I'm like, I always find the whole like breathing through how big a penis is in these books like so weird, because it makes me think of like birth, like childbirth. like
you're being really coached through something that's kind of weird.
Yes. So anyway, but I will let you know that at the beginning of the next chapter, the narrator tells us that they did it in the bed against the wall and in the living room chair throughout the night. So
great.
Lots and lots of sex from here on out. And I'll emphasize now that these are not friends with Bennies, okay?
No.
They actually like each other. They have confessed a lot of, like, uncomfortable feelings. And so it's now weird because the town thinks that they are already dating.
Mm-hmm.
Her family thinks they're fake dating and hate each other. But they actually like each other now.
Right.
So now it's like this weird reverse fake dating.
Yeah. Now, unlike all the other times people have started to fake date each other, it's become real.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Precisely.
Shocking.
Yeah. So what ensues is them like sneaking around, but also preparing for the next competition, which leads to some sexting, which leads to our main girl story having to masturbate in front of the six queens in her bedroom.
Oh, and that's too bad.
She's like, yeah, I'm not proud of it. Anyway, it is now the candy cane showdown.
Okay.
You could say that the lovebirds are definitely distracted by each other. They've got to put on a show for the town, but then Taryn accuses Story of having real feelings, which she kind of brushes off. And like Max is convinced that their team needs to do something new and innovative with pineapple flavored candy canes. But Cole's like, no, the pineapple was a mistake before. It'll be a mistake again. We're going traditional.
Keep it traditional.
So when they're in the throes of the heated kitchen and they're trying to, you know, temperature gauge those sugars and do all the things, both Cole and Story decide to go with like kind of a traditional candy cane style, except for Cole does like multiple colors. So like that's kind of what his little flair is.
Wow.
But the problem is when it comes to the actual pulling of the candy cane, sugar shit.
Yep.
Story is not strong enough to do the initial pulls.
Sure.
So Cole stops in the middle of the competition and runs over and rescues her and helps her stretch out the candy, which the town finds very cute.
But I was going to say.
It shows that he really does care about her.
Yeah.
So Story ends up getting third place. Second place goes to Cole with his three colors. Meanwhile, the guy who wins first place gets it because of his creative twist using pineapple flavoring.
Son of a bitch.
So Max is like, fuck.
Hope's say smut moment. That asshole sniped first place with pineapple flavor.
So after like some busybodies were like, oh, when are you guys going on your next date? And like Cole's like, this is a wonderful time to like force her into a date that she has to actually go on with me and we don't have to sneak around. So they decide to go to Evergreen Farms where Cole is going to introduce her to the reindeer.
Yay, that's okay? A cute date. Someone introduced me to the reindeer.
So cute.
Who has them?
Yeah. So he, you're also married. You should just make your husband. Sorry.
Just got really excited about reindeer. Lost my head.
Somebody
for a
take me on a date. I'm married, but I'd love to see a reindeer. If a man in a white van pulls up and says, "I've got reindeer, I've got reindeer. Come help me look for them," you're gonna say yes, right?
Is he especially beautiful? Because maybe,
maybe, yeah. Apparently, what if he was in the Grinch outfit that I described from earlier on?
Maybe.
Maybe. Is he going to pelvic thrust?
Hard to say.
So he does introduce her to the animals, but he's also going to introduce her to his penis because
he hasn't already done that. Wait, but hasn't he already?
Sorry.
He's done that before, right?
That was just me trying to be clever.
Okay, I was like, anyway.
But never mind. He gets her up against a pole and is like, can I tie you up? And she's like, absolutely, thank you. And so he uses these leather reins around her wrists, and once she's all tied up, he like begins to do like a little stripping until he pulls out one of the first place winner's candy canes from his pocket. Do you know where we're going with this?
Weird oral with candy.
Oh, we sure are. So he makes her suck on it before putting it back in his mouth, uh-huh. only to make it a precursor to ask if she wants to suck on his dick like that. And uh-huh. she's like, yeah, but only if you rub some of the candy cane on your dick, which he does.
Sure. That's not mm-hmm. that's not too crazy.
No. Okay.
It's interesting. it's not too crazy.
Oh, we're not done. We are so not done.
Okay.
So he gets her out of her pants and shoes, which was very nice. But, and again, I want to remind you, she is tied up to a pole.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But before he goes inside, sorry, let me explain this differently, actually. He's going to go down on her.
Okay.
Now it's his turn to reciprocate.
Yeah.
But he rubs the candy cane between her folds.
Oh, no.
And that's where the yeast infection comes
oh,
in.
Oh, no, the infection.
But then he sucks on it. And is like, that's delicious. And then he continues to rub it against her clitoris.
I'm just not sure how vaginally safe it is.
It's that's not.
Probably not.
So when they finally go to Pound Town, she's convinced she can like feel him in her kidneys. She's like, this man's huge. Of course. Right. Mm-hmm. And he finishes inside her. Don't worry. They already had a conversation about birth control and being tested.
Right.
And this is the sound from the audiobook. Okay.
I'm ready. But that not beeped out. Again, not if you have a child out. With you, please stop
I
mean, that.
I literally just said clitoris, so
please stop that.
Okay,
I'm ready.
Quote, and then to my surprise, he squats in front of me and with the candy cane, how on earth did he hold on to that the whole time? He scoops up his cum from near my pussy and brings the candy cane up to my mouth.
Wow.
Yeah. And then everyone was like, but how does that work? And so Julia, or not Julia Quinn, wrong author.
She was like, I actually know a lot about this.
And she's like, actually, this is my pen name. No, Megan Quinn made a video of her using the sound and uses the hook side, like uh-huh. does a demonstration yeah, sure. using the hook side of the candy cane. Okay.
Amazing.
So if anyone was curious.
Hilarious.
If you're not sold on this couple yet, well, they are sold on each other. They yeah. are like smitten. And it's just kind of hard because Story wants to keep it a secret for the sake of her sister in the competition. Cole is like, fuck it. Let's just tell her. Like, Town thinks we're already dating. I'm like practically in love with you. But then she decides to ride him while telling him that they got to keep it a secret. And of course, that distracts him from the conversation. He's like, okay, sure.
Yeah.
And Max is like now plants this seed that she might be screwing with Cole just to get in his head for the next competition. And Cole's no, she would never do that. What do you mean? This is my girl. The next competition is Christmas caroling. Which is uh-huh. going to happen on a stage, not like roaming around town, but like on a stage.
Yeah, so a performance.
Yeah, it's a performance. So this is actually kind of emotional because Max gets a big printout of Cole's last family Christmas photo that he had with his parents, and they project it up onto the stage. And Max and Cole wear the matching sweaters that they had in that photo. Jeez. And then they sing Blue Christmas.
Oh no. Uh-huh. That's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I should also note here that like when they're getting ready, Max spots like all the hickeys and scratches from sexual activities with Story. And there's like a hint of Max feeling like he's kind of losing his friend. He's like, well, we were hanging out.
I'll give you scratches,
but,
he said.
I'll give you scratches. But he's also like, now I feel a little lonely. And this is where I'm going to plant the seed in your head, Hope.
That there'll be
and
another book where he falls in love with the sister.
I would love for there to be another book with the sister. This is my formal petition. Okay.
Do it. Christmas in July. They fall in love.
Just wait. This book has an epilogue. So you're going to get something.
Oh.
You're going to get that candy cane. No, sorry. That wasn't it. That wasn't it. I take it back. Okay. So meanwhile, Sori is freaking out because this is the same event that caused her to go into that tirade like 10 years ago.
So right, the one where she fell down?
Yes. And so she ends up doing the Mean Girls Jingle Bell Rock routine with Aunt Cindy and Taryn. Okay.
Crazy thing to decide that Aunt Cindy is suddenly physically capable of doing the sexy Jingle Bell Rock dance, given she was previously supposed to be near death for the sake of winning over the crowd in this competition.
Precisely. But it goes so well that Taryn even says that she's proud of Sori, which is like a first for them. Like, this is like sisterly bonding. Okay. So Sori ends up getting third and Cole gets first.
I mean, his family died.
He's milking those points if he can ever.
Saddest shit that's ever happened.
And so for the first time, Sori is like cheering for Cole. She's like genuinely happy he won. Mm-hmm. And later that night, she sneaks over to their house and like they kind of talk about their future after the competition. And like they don't really come up with a resolution, but he's kind of got rose-colored glasses about the whole situation. Mm-hmm. Right? He's like, well, this is fine. Everything's fine. But they fuck anyway. And for sure. And he convinces her to stay and is like, we're going to get you up early enough that you can sneak back into the house. No one will ever know. Turns out she does sneak back into the house, but then gets caught by Taryn. And Taryn is like, what are you doing out? And Story's like, I was just checking how much snow we got. And Taryn's like, okay. And like, they kind of have this weird, like, conversation within a conversation, you know, where you're trying to get at something.
Yeah.
And Taryn reminds her, like, well, you know, we're going to be leaving soon.
And she's like,
because Aunt Cindy's doing much better. She could even do the Jingle Bell Rock last night. So
she's like, the snow is dangerous to drive in.
Yeah. Like, I think like, yeah. So it's just like this kind of awkward conversation. Okay. Sure. Yeah. And now we are at one of the final competitions because we'll have the light.
Oh, the again. Rejudging. Yes. I had forgotten about that.
This is a gift wrapping contest. And Sori, right before this contest, Sori has kind of a family bonding time with Cindy and Taryn where, you know, they're talking about how proud of each other they are, how much they've enjoyed this time together, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, across the hall or whatever, Max is giving Cole shit because he's wearing a thong under his jeans that Sori dared him to wear to the competition. Hey. So it's just like, tonal change. Okay.
Let him do what he wants. let him cook.
He's like, it's surprisingly comfortable. And Max is like, I'm just, you know, I've always been curious about a thong and I'm just happy you found somebody who you'd be willing to wear a thong
for. Yeah. That is the kind of conversation I want to have them have. So perfect.
So they are in the throes of wrapping and taping and bows and all the shit. And when the adrenaline is over, Sori ends up in third place and second goes to Cole. So again, let's not forget that we still have the displays, Sori gets kind of emotional because she's convinced that they will not be able to make up the points with their display. Okay.
Which is funny because it doesn't really matter to you at this point.
Well, it does to Aunt Cindy.
It does to Aunt Cindy.
So
that's true.
Let's take a turn at 91% of this book to tell you that we're going to get Taryn's point of view for one chapter.
Okay? Good. I've been wanting to hear from her.
Yeah. She's like, she's super skeptical of Sori and how she's been behaving lately. And she starts rethinking through all the competitions. She's re-looking over her notes from all of the contests they've done. And she finally comes to the conclusion that Sori has fallen in love with Cole.
Obviously.
But Cole is using her emotions to throw off the competition. And something needs to be done.
Yeah.
Okay?
Of course.
All right. Let's get into the crux of the final act.
Okay. Okay? I am braced for what I think personally will be unnecessary conflict. Go.
You're absolutely right. Great. So Cole does like this annual sleepover at Max's house. Not important. I'm not going to get into it. But he comes home to find that his whole house is completely bare. There's not a thing on it. There's not a light. There's not a tinsel. There's not any greenery. Nothing. Okay.
Wow.
And of course, he tracks those little snow prints back to Cindy's house, and his mind immediately goes to the worst place.
Yeah, she literally grinched my house.
Sori sabotaged me again. And that little seed that Max planted a while back about Story using him is now mm-hmm. taking root, and he's mm-hmm. determined he got screwed over.
I knew this would happen.
His heart's broken because he has fallen in love with her. Right. And he goes to confront her, of course, and she denies. And she starts tearing up. She's like, what are you talking about? Like, I
didn't steal your light.
And he's like, don't play dumb. Like, I don't even want to see you right now. And he, like, flees the scene. Okay. Now Story is brokenhearted from the accusation, and she confesses to, like, because Taryn and Cindy come rushing in and are like, what was that about?
What are you so sad about?
Yeah. And she was like, I was falling in love with him. And Taryn was like, oh no, honey, he was playing you. And Taryn just outright admits that she was the one to take the lights. Like, there was, like, no mystery or wonder for a second. But she was like, I took his lights because he's been using you this whole time. And Story's fuming. She's like, no, there was no part of our relationship. Like, you are the one that was on the outs. Like, you didn't understand that this was real, right. Yada, yada.
He's like, no. We were doing the pranking. We were playing you the whole time.
Yeah. If you were to steal somebody's Christmas decorations and hide them somewhere, where would you hide them?
I think practically, I don't feel like I'm going to want to do a lot of dragging them past my garage. And yeah, fair. I know that means you're going to immediately find them. It's where you would keep Christmas lights. But, like, it's a lot of Christmas lights. Yeah. And if you take them off and ball them all up, you're not going to want to, like, bring them into your house and bring them up into an attic or a basement. So, like, yeah, I would probably just put them in, like, the shed or a garage.
That's a great point because Taryn just put them in the garbage bin. So,
okay. So wasteful, first of all.
So Story, like, goes out and gets these decorations, and she starts going to the neighbors asking, like, their friends to help replace the lights on Cole's house. And then finally we have the crux where Taryn and Cindy and Story have to have a big heart-to-heart conversation. Mm-hmm. Aunt Cindy drops the bomb that she never had a broken hip.
What? I mean, we should have known that, by the way, that she was doing so many pelvic hip thrusts in celebration, like the first competition, but still.
She concocted this plan with their mom so that Story and Taryn could spend time with her and, like, kind of get back to their roots because, like, they've both been adrift a little bit lately. And so after some more trauma bonding and the sisters admit that they love each other and they're mm-hmm. sorry for past transgressions, et cetera, et cetera. I don't care about the story about the sisters. What I care about.
Bring the man back.
Bring the candy cane fucking back. Okay. So now they've got to come up with a plan to reunite Story and Cole, right?
Obviously.
So Max goes and finds Cole where he's been hiding in the barn with the reindeer. Okay.
That's where I would hide as well. So
absolutely. And he's like, let me drive you up to the farmhouse. You can sleep in the house tonight. And Cole's like, that's kind of weird because Max's farmhouse is not very far away. I guess we'll get in the truck and drive up there. But then Max drives. And then keeps driving.
Oops.
And then keeps driving. And he's like, well, I got to go pick something up in town. And he's like, keeps driving.
I have to drive for however long it takes three women to reassemble all of your Christmas lights at your house.
Well, let's not forget the whole town chipped in.
Oh, because, I didn't know the whole town was going to help. That's nice.
Well, I did say that. You could listen. This poor town put in all the work and you didn't even know it. Give credit where credit's due.
It just seems like it would be embarrassing to have to go to the town and be like, town, my sister was a dickhole and now we need your help.
But everyone loves him, so they're willing to do it.
That's true.
So they finally get back in town and, of course, they roll up to his house, which is completely lit. Mm-hmm. And the whole town has rallied for him. And in the middle of all those people is Story waiting for him. And Max admits to him, you know, he misjudged her intentions and that it was actually all Taryn's fault. And now you got to go get your girl. So what does Cole do? He just jumps out and he runs to her and she's like, I edit these movies about grand gestures, yet I've never done one myself and yada, yada. And then they do big confessions of love and they decide the competition doesn't matter. And they kiss in the green Christmas lighting of his house. Yay. That's so sweet. Would you like the epilogue?
Yeah, who won?
Yeah, bitches, tell me who won.
I'm competitive as fuck. Tell me who the winner is.
I believe that this is set a year later.
Okay.
The narrator makes us aware that Story has a newborn baby. And we get this direct quote from the narrator. Mm-hmm. Do you really think you could get away with not getting that girl pregnant from the way you humped her through the story? Just be glad she didn't give birth to a pineapple flavored candy cane.
Okay. There were conversations about birth control and stuff. So like, whatever.
Whatever.
It's a big energy to come at me with.
Story. Also, Story finally meets Taryn's boyfriend, who she's kind of like, I thought he was a mystical creature for there for a while. Mm. And she was like, he's not who I thought she'd end up with. But I guess like it makes sense. Like he's chill and cool. And then like, you know, Story ended up moving in with Cole and making their little house a home again with their new baby.
Unpacking stuff.
It turns out somebody else won last year and he decided he's not going to participate. The guy who had the pineapple candy cane won.
That son of a bitch.
Yes. And he's decided he wants to go out on a high note. So he's like not going to participate again. So the whole family is kind of sitting around talking about like, who's going to go up against Aunt Cindy this year?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think it's it? Who do you think's going up against Aunt Cindy? I've only given you a limited number of characters.
I only know a handful of people. It seems like the only people who are nearest Aunt Cindy are going to be our main characters, who I think still live next door, right? Doesn't?
Yeah, yeah.
Dorian,
but it's actually Max who's going to participate against Aunt Cindy. So
that motherfucker.
That is the end of our story.
Wow.
I really hope. Fingers crossed, toes crossed, arms crossed that we get a second book with Max's story. And I hope that it's Taryn and Max, because that would be so fun to have an opposites attract.
It's what the people deserve.
It's what we deserve, Megan.
We deserve, Megan.
I'm going to let you know right now from a diversity perspective. Every main person in this book was white and straight to our knowledge.
Yeah, these are some stereotypically white people activities.
And there were some side characters, I believe, that were possibly diverse, but they were not main. They were not in the forefront. So that was smidge disappointing.
Yeah.
The plot is a 5. It's a 5 for me. How could it not be a fucking 5?
Oh, if I didn't give it a 5, that you'd yell at me. I did really like this book. It's a great book.
One thing I think I get nervous about with holiday romance books is that they do a plot concept at the beginning, but then they get so distracted by the romance and then they try and kind of do a Hail Mary at the end of like, we tied it all together.
We got to wrap it up.
But they had the competitions divvied out throughout the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yes, we don't know who technically, like, yes, they didn't tell us who won until the last epilogue. I almost said last chapter, but it was the epilogue. But but I thought it was fun. Did you not think it was fun?
No, I did think it was fun.
the amount of silence.
I thought it was lovely. I didn't have a I'm bowled over by the magnificence of the plot experience, but I really liked it.
Okay. That's all. So what are you gonna give it?
Oh, we're gonna give it a 4.5.
Okay.
Oh, that's fine.
Oh.
That's great.
Well, you seem like more mediocre about it. Do you want to give it lower than a 4.5?
No, I didn't think it was I didn't think it was mediocre. I did really enjoy it. I just didn't have like a sparks flying Don Juan Velociraptor style reaction to the plot.
And maybe I should have disclosed at the very beginning of this. It's like, you know, it's hard when we do so many of our like crazy smutty books and then we come back to like a true traditional romance book that it's like, these aren't going to be crazy plots.
Yeah, this is a real whiplash in tone.
That's
it's
fair.
A regular book.
It's like a normal book. There's a reason why so many people have loved it this year. Okay, so I'm giving that a 5. You're giving a 4.5. And then the smut, I'm giving a 4.5 just because even though it was very fun and we made it creative – I would have liked things to be smuttier earlier. Like even if it was like a little teasing or like some sort of circumstance where like they couldn't hold back. Like I think the first smutty scene we actually get of them like kissing or making out is like 60% of the way. I'm like, okay, you guys, earlier is better for me. What about you?
Yeah, that's good context because it really is very action packed. By action alone, I would give it a 4.5.
Okay.
To a 5, but it's good to know that when you're reading it, it's not quite as obviously we have to abridge the story, so it's not as fast paced.
Yes. It seems. And I think one of the things for me too is that like this book just had so many other things that it did keep me entertained, like the wittiness and the humor and how this author writes was really fun. So I actually, disclaimer, listen to this audiobook the day of the election. Listen to the entire audiobook.
What a conflicting
day. This was, I was reading this scene of them going to like the mistletoe, having the mistletoe incident and the car thing when I was in line to put my ballot in. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So
a roller coaster of things to feel.
And the guy next to me in line kept trying to talk to me. I'm like, excuse me, sir. I am listening to a smutty book right now while voting for our future.
Yeah. Hold up while I listen to this smutty book.
Okay. So cover. There is a link there for you.
Yes, I have opened the link and it's a very cute illustrated cover. Lots of like minty, kind of a cute green background, little snowflakes, little white stars. There's a big white Christmas tree in the background. And then it is like Grinch style, a hand. How do you explain that? Holding an ornament? Like,
yes,
in the like way
kind of pinching
the way the Grinch, you know, the way the Grinch does.
Yes.
Into the Grinch way. Little red nails, manicured hand, and like probably a Santa outfit because it's got a white puffy sleeve and then a red sleeve, and it says "How My Neighbor Stole Christmas," and it's got like fun sort of Susicoli font, pink and red letters, and the O and stole is the heart of the ornament that's being held, and it is a USA Today bestselling author Megan Quinn book, so it's very cute.
I'm giving it a 5. I love this cover. I think it's so cute.
It's very cute. I like the Grinch tie-in. I will give it a 4.5.
Okay, what's the downgrade?
I like to be able to see the characters more. I don't like using solely my imagination to envision the character sometimes.
That's fair.
Like a visual reference.
That leaves me at a 96.6% and Hope at a 90%. What is your say smut moment?
My say smut moment. I mean, I did have a very genuine say smut reaction to finding out that Aunt Cindy's hip wasn't even broken.
Yeah, no, that was quite a shock.
Obviously using a candy cane in your orifices is pretty smut, say yeah, smuttacular. Yeah, yeah. Like I feel like that goes without saying.
I did think to myself when rereading for this episode, how were the reindeer in that scene? Like the barn was kind of, they had a space heater. They did say that. But one of the things, you know how barns will sometimes have those doors that are like kind of like French doors where they
you
can keep the top open so the
horses
can look
out. So it's just like a horse staring at you the whole time?
Yeah, that's what I want to know. Were the reindeer looking at him?
I feel like probably. I mean,
we talk about how the dolls were there when she masturbated. So I want to know if the reindeers were there when he scooped stuff up with a candy cane.
And I would have to assume yes. Although it would be cool if all the reindeer were like, don't worry, bro. We got you. I'm going to turn around. I'm going to lay down.
Yeah.
That would be great. In a way where I can't see you.
Yeah. Or they're just little voyeurists. Like
maybe they're into it. Maybe they're into it. And that's fine as long as everyone consents.
I also love that we just kept fucking in his childhood bedroom, like with all of his like posters from childhood and stuff. True. And like in the race car bed that we believe was in there.
And I'm pretty pissed off that guy got first place in the candy cane competition for using pineapple.
That's so true.
By the way, which like the obvious cool twist would have been to have done like a spiced cranberry orange one. Obviously, it's more holiday.
Oh, is that what you feel?
Yes, that's very much what I feel. If you're not going to do a mint one, that it's more holiday to do something like a cranberry or orangey or like gingery or gingerbready.
Huh.
I'm not impressed with the pineapple, but also it's just like pretty lame.
One of the other girls who was competing did strawberry flavored, but she did them in the shapes of hearts and they didn't like the shapes.
Not Christmas. Nothing Christmas about any of those things that have just been said.
Okay. I'm trying to think, you know, like I'm going through all the events that I left so much out. Again, 480 pages. I think this is our longest book.
Big book.
But it's, it just was really witty. And I wish I could tell you all the fun quotes, but I had to get through like the bulk of this story. Also the irony of like how his villain origin story isn't necessarily that his parents died. It's that like, she was a bitch after.
is that he didn't tell his quote unquote friend and she was upset about something completely separate, unrelated without any knowledge of the death of his family. And
yeah,
it led to a very large, long-standing grudge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's fine.
Yeah. And yeah, of course, we can't talk about our feelings until we are almost crashed into the side of a mountain during a snowstorm.
That's the only time you can talk about your feelings.
But with that said, this is still certified fresh for us, with, you know, 90 and 96.6%. And I highly recommend the audiobook. Ooh, sorry, everyone. I highly recommend the audiobook. It was very, very well done. And that's our story for the day. So if you want to, go enter that giveaway on our Instagram at Say Smut Podcast. Additionally, we'd love to hear your book recommendations. I'm making the list for next year and checking it twice. send those our way via email at saysmutpodcast@gmail.com. Also, you could, you know, be our enemies to lovers to fake dating to real dating if you wanted to pop us a rating or review on the podcast of platform of your choosing.
Yeah, we could start to fake date, but then you could make it real.
We could make it real, real. Real, real with a candy cane.
Mm-hmm. No, don't put a cane. You already know that I'm going to finish this episode out by saying, please don't put candy canes up your vaginal hole. Please.
No, this is also the second story that we've talked about a candy cane in a
area. I feel an infection coming on right now just from talking
just
about it.
I'm just itchy thinking it's about just it. Bad. Yeah. It's bad. Well, everyone, keep those candy canes out of your holes.
Unless it's your mouth, that's the best hole to put it in.
Stay smutty. Goodbye.
Bye.